This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Race and Fraud, Ruth Benedict and Gene Wiltfish. This installment is going to examine two specific characters, and eventually we'll get to their one, it's not their only contribution, but it's one significant contribution that they made to the larger anti-racist fraud. These are two women who were students of Franz Boas, who we've discussed in detail in previous installments, and their efforts represent only part of the long-term team effort to carry on this crusade that Boas had begun, and that is to derail race science and replace it with cultural narrative, to decouple the academic investigation and understanding of human beings and human relations, human nature, from biology, and change the focus instead to sentimentalism with some moralizing thrown in. To replace clarity with obfuscation. And that project, reduced to a word, is anthropology. That's what anthropology is. So last time, and actually I've cited this several times now, this McDonald's, Kevin McDonald's chapter 2 from his book, The Culture of Critique, but there's a section here I had wanted to cite previously. I'm going to cite it now because it fits in what I'm going to talk about here. An important technique of the Boasian school was to cast doubt on general theories of human evolution, such as those implying developmental sequences, by emphasizing the vast diversity and chaotic minutiae of human behavior, as well as the relativism of standards of cultural evaluation. The Boasians argued that general theories of cultural evolution must await a detailed cataloging of cultural diversity, but in fact, no general theories emerged from this body of research in the ensuing half century of its dominance of the profession. Because of its rejection of fundamental scientific activities such as generalization and classification, Boasian anthropology may thus be characterized more as an anti-theory than a theory of human culture. One of the things I noticed a long time ago, before I ever even really thought about race or the Jews, was this tactic that leftists, as I understood them at the time, had of throwing dirt in the air. Of saying, oh, this is all so confusing, is the phrase I reduced it to at the time. Everything is just so confusing. And you see it in these arguments that anthropologists make. For their case, they provide lots of details. They make appeals to authority. They call what they're doing proof, or what they're offering as proof. And against the position that they're arguing, they pose seeming contradictions that they never really spell out or examine in detail. They make unspoken implications, and they're sowing doubt. They tried to sow doubt, it seems. And the result is doubt, confusion, and demoralization. And demoralization in the sense that it removes the morale or diminishes the morale of their opponents, and also questions their morality. I used the phrases two episodes ago, hand-waving and smoke-blowing, without describing what I meant by that. And they were very apt, I think, in that case, but they're even more apt here. And that is, you know, hand-waving I looked it up, is defined actually as the action of displaying the appearance of doing something when actually doing little or nothing, which is like anthropologists' arguments. And smoke blowing is very similar. It says to say things that are not true in order to make yourself or something you are involved with seem better than it is. And that, too, I think is true of anthropology. These are old tricks. That's why they have terms like this to describe them. But they work. They are effective. So the women that I want to talk about here, the students of Boas, are Ruth Benedict, she's first and foremost. And I quoted Ruth Benedict in that installment, two installments ago, when I started it with a quote of hers: the purpose of anthropology is to make the world safe for human differences. And I want to get, it was in investigating her that I got into this subject, and it's enough for a whole installment. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight and probably the next time too. The other woman is Jean Weltfish, and Jean is actually a nickname short for Regina. So let me discuss these women in more detail now. Ruth Benedict was born Ruth Fulton in 1887. She died in 1948. She's described by Wikipedia as an American anthropologist and folklorist. She was born in New York City. She attended Vassar College, graduated in 1909. She entered graduate studies at Columbia University in 1919. So there was a 10-year gap between when she graduated as an undergraduate and went into graduate studies. And I'll have more on that in a bit here. She studied under Franz Boas, as we know. Margaret Mead, with whom she may have entered a romantic relationship, and Marvin Oppler were among her students and colleagues. And Margaret Mead is a big name in anthropology. More on her in a bit, too. Ruth's Benedict's father died when she was 2 or 3 years old, and I think that that had a significant effect on her psychology and later development. Eventually, she, according to Wikipedia, she developed a close friendship with Boas, who took on a role of as a kind of father figure in her life, and Benedict lovingly referred to him as Papa Franz. And I had seen that nickname for Boas previously. I don't think I've mentioned it, but that's where it comes from. It comes from Benedict wanting a replacement for her father and looking up to Boas that way. Margaret Mead and Ruth Benedict are considered to be two of the most influential and famous women anthropologists of their time. Weltfish, not so much. Benedict died of a heart attack when she died in 1948. She was 61 years old. Her major work is a textbook or book titled Patterns of Culture, published in 1934. It was translated into 14 languages and was published in many editions as standard reading for anthropology courses in American universities for years. The essential idea of the book, according to the foreword by Margaret Mead, is, quote, her view of human cultures as personality writ large. So that's interesting, and I want to comment on that, because this seems to be saying, and I don't know, I don't have the book, and I didn't go and look up the preface to see, or the foreword to see Margaret Mead's extended comments, but she seems to be expressing the idea that culture is a collective expression of a people, reflecting the tastes and personality traits of the people who create the culture. And to me, in other words, that means culture is an expression of race. That's how I understand what culture is. But elsewhere you can find, when you dig into what anti-racists have to say about race and culture, they deny that culture is linked in any way to race, that it springs from race. In Patterns of Culture, Benedict expresses her belief in cultural relativism. She desired to show, and this gets at her motive here for her work, she desired to show that each color culture has its own moral imperatives, that it can be understood, that can be understood only if one studies that culture as a whole. It was wrong, she felt, to disparage the customs or values of a culture different from one's own. Those customs had a meaning to the people who lived them, which should not be dismissed or trivialized. We should not try to evaluate people by our standards alone. Morality, she argued, was relative to the values of the culture in which one operates. This, too, comports with my understanding of morality, and that is that morality is relative to the group it concerns, the group that that believes in that morality. It's a who-whom sort of thing, is, you know, who's concerned about whom. And that applies both to specific particularist versions of morality, but also to universalism. In universalist morality, it's just that the person who believes in a universalist morality thinks morality applies to everyone, whereas particularist forms of morality are more group-based, and good or bad is defined as what's good or bad for that group, and the Jews are a good example of that. Another point I could make here about this business about patterns of culture and what Benedict's motives were behind her life's work, or at least her academic work, is that Boasian anti-racism, which she participated in, is a disparaging, dismissive, and trivializing criticism of Western culture. It's an attack on Western culture, and there's a double standard here, or a hypocrisy, really, where they present this idea that, you know, nobody has any basis to attack other people's cultures unless you understand it in its totality, and even then, you know, it's really pretty much taboo. It's only blacks can criticize blacks, and only Polynesians can criticize Polynesians, and so forth. We shouldn't judge them. But the anti-racists, of course, have acid criticism for Western culture and for white people. And in fact, this whole effort of anthropology and anti-racism is described approvingly by anti-racists as a radical challenge to Western cultural norms. They openly admit that that's exactly how it happened. It was a radical challenge to the norms of the day. So they weren't respecting Western culture like they say you have to respect every other culture. What Kevin MacDonald called this, of course, was the Jewish culture of critique. It's Jewish in nature. That's where it comes from. You know, the Jews are the most acid critics of anyone and everything else. And they're also the ones who cry foul most loudly and most readily when anyone criticizes them. And we see here also that whereas the anthropologists try to reduce it to culture rather than race, that when it comes to Western culture, it's not just the culture that they criticize. They criticize the people, too. The criticism is aimed at the supposed moral and mental flaws of Westerners, of white people, not just our culture. And, you know, ultimately, the point of this series that I'm doing now of installments is that the criticism is based on fraud. It's based on lies. It's based on hypocrisy. It's based on universalist-sounding, scientific-sounding language that's disguising a pursuit of narrower loyalties and motives, whether they're ethnic or, in the case of Benedict, ideological. I have a long paragraph here. I'm going to just try and summarize this rather than reading it. When Boas retired in 1937, there was some controversy in the department about who should take over, and there was a faction that wanted Ruth Benedict to take over, but she didn't ultimately take over. So from 1937 on, there was sort of two camps within Columbia's anthropology department. She was considered the head of one of them that was not officially in power, and a man named Ralph Linton was in charge of the other. There's probably gold to be mined there in trying to figure out what the differences were between those two camps, but I haven't dug into that yet, maybe in the future. So regarding Benedict's motives for taking up Boas's crusade, beside the things I've already noted, that the father figure thing, there was another biography available from Columbia itself, columbia.edu, about Ruth Benedict, pretty short, but it included this passage. In 1921, Dr. Franz Boas waived the admission requirements and admitted Dr. Ruth Benedict as a PhD candidate in the Columbia University Anthropology program. Boas was extremely important to Dr. Benedict, who wrote of him in 1940, quote, "I can't tell you what a place you fill in my life." sounds like a personal note there. A little later on, it notes that she did field research with American Southwestern tribes, with the Serrano of California and the Blackfoot of Canada. Her wiki page does go into a brief discussion of the work that she collaborated with Weltfish on, which is titled The Races of Mankind, and I'm going to get into that in great detail, but I just want to mention a few things here to give you an idea of what's to come here. One of Benedict's lesser-known works, this was not her major work, it was a pamphlet titled The Races of Mankind, which she wrote with her colleague at the Columbia University Department of Anthropology, Jean Weltfish. This pamphlet was intended for American troops and set forth in simple language with cartoon illustrations the scientific case against racist beliefs. The writers explicate in section after section the best evidence they knew for human equality. They want to encourage all these types of people to join together and not fight amongst themselves. I think that's a bit of a whitewash as to what their motives were. That was maybe the motive of the U.S. military, whoever it was in the military, who thought it was a good idea to hire these two to write this pamphlet. But I don't think that that was their motives at all. So moving on here to Jean Weltfish now, the Wikipedia page on Jean Weltfish describes her as having been born Regina Weltfish in 1902, and she lived until 1980. She's described as an American anthropologist and historian working at Columbia University from 28 to 53. She studied with Boas and was a specialist in the culture and history of the Pawnee people, another Indian, Amerindian people. Her 1965 ethnography, The Lost Universe, is considered the authoritative work on Pawnee culture to this day. She is also known for the 1943 pamphlet for the U.S. Army called The Races of Mankind, which she co-wrote, meant to teach military personnel about the cultural differences between the peoples of the world. I'll skip the rest of that. She was one of two daughters born into a German-Jewish family in New York's Lower East Side. Jean Weltfish grew up speaking German as her first language, taught by a German governess hired by her grandfather. Her father, to whom she was very close, died when she was 13. So we see a lot of similarities here. Not only are these two women women, they both lost their fathers relatively early. They both studied Indian peoples academically before going on to this anti-racist project. Her Wikipedia page also mentions the races of mankind, although it seems to give it a little more prominence because for Weltfish it was one of her major works rather than being a minor work. Although the Wikipedia page, confusingly enough, says it's a minor work, one of Weltfish's minor works. But it had a surprisingly great effect, it describes. And published in 1943, The Races of Mankind was a pamphlet intended for American troops. Blah, 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 same stuff as under Benedict's page. The publication of this pamphlet and the subsequent political furor that it caused when it was decried as a piece of socialist propaganda attracted the attention of anti-communist authorities. The pamphlet represented the Boasian way of thinking about race, which later became the standard view in anthropology and was endorsed with a 1948 UNESCO declaration. But at the time, this was politically controversial, especially in the American South, where Jim Crow was still in rigor. Weltfish herself described her motivations for writing the pamphlet, and this part is important, because this is from, again, I think a private memo that she wrote, not something for public consumption. During the first 4 years of my graduate training at Columbia, Hitler rose to power in Germany, bolstering his heinous operations with racist theories developed from distorted anthropology. The books of Franz Boas were burned in Germany. In 1942, after Boas's death, Ruth Benedict, my senior colleague in the anthropology department, and I felt that we should carry the banner on the race question. In 1943, Ruth Benedict and I collaborated on a pamphlet, The Races of Mankind, published by the Public Affairs Committee. The pamphlet was originally written at the request of the USO for distribution to the men in the armed forces who had to fight side by side with allies such as the Hucks, I have no idea who that is, in the Philippines, I guess some tribe in the Philippines, and the Solomon Islanders. The races of mankind was used not only for orientation by the army, but in the denazification program in Germany after the war. And this was written by Weltfisch in 1967 and quoted in some biographical work about her afterward. Now, there's a little note here, too, on her wiki page. Far-right political groups in the U.S. and elsewhere still consider Weltfisch's work to be part of a conspiracy by Boas and his students to eliminate the study of race in psychology and anthropology in, quote, preparation for the defeat of, quote, white civilization, unquote, by the Jews, unquote. So that's a funny one. They were actually conspiring. It was an open conspiracy. It was what eventually became called anti-racism. And as I've detailed in many installments now, this was an ongoing effort. I don't know, they'd never maybe sat down all together at one table and said, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it. But it was an ongoing collaborative effort, a team effort, as I've said before, toward a common goal. And using very similar tactics and sharing those tactics amongst each other. So I'd say it was a conspiracy. It was an open conspiracy. More on that in an upcoming installment. There's a lot there to dig into. So some of the basic facts about the races of mankind, just from reading the two wiki pages on these two women that I want to state here before getting into the work itself, is that it was intended for American troops, and that's noted on both wiki pages. It was first published in 1943, that's noted in both wiki pages. It had a surprisingly great effect, we see that in Weltfisch's wiki page. And according to some wiki editors' opinion, it made the scientific case against racist beliefs. The pamphlet was not widely circulated within the army, and eventually it was banned as subversive, and that comes out of the Weltfisch wiki. It was used not only for orientation by the army, but in the denazification program in Germany after the war, again, according to the Weltfisch wiki page. So there's a little bit of contradiction here, saying that it had great effect, and that it didn't have much of an effect, or at least not within the army. And I think that's how to resolve that contradiction, seeming contradiction, is it was maybe intended first or sponsored first by the army or the military, but actually had a larger effect beyond its use by the military. Another biographical source on Gene Weltfisch I want to read from here. Despite its widespread use until then, this gets to basic facts about the race of mankind. The race of mankind was banned from the armed forces libraries in 1944, just a year after it was published. It continued to be translated and read around the world. There was a dispute over whether or not the pamphlet showed northern blacks as smarter than southern whites. Both wiki pages make a big deal out of that, but when we get into the book itself or the pamphlet itself, we'll see for ourselves what it says and talk about it then. The price on the cover of the pamphlet that I have, or I have the PDF for, is 10 cents. But looking up on Amazon, a used copy goes for $20 today. You can own your own copy of this pamphlet. So I was trying to look for information on this pamphlet and find out more detail about it. There is no dedicated wiki page on it or its history or, you know, who was it in the military that commissioned this? How exactly did it come about? You know, whose idea was it? Did somebody pitch it to the military and convince them to do it? Or did the military, you know, solicit this from these two women? I suspect it was probably the two women that pitched it to the military and got funding for it and so forth, got their backing. I did find another variation on it, though, titled, and this was an Amazon page, In Henry's Backyard, The Races of Mankind. Same authors, Ruth Benedict and Gene Weltfisch. And this was published in 1948, and it's described very briefly as a cheerfully illustrated little story about fighting the, quote, green devils, unquote, of prejudice and recognizing all races are equally human. And then I dug a little deeper and found that one embedded in a larger book titled Tales for Little Rebels, a collection of radical children's literature. And this one was interesting because it described not only that book, it had a little editor's preface to this variation of the story, but it talked also about the original pamphlet, and it said it described it as debunked. It debunked the racial myths spread by fascists abroad and racists at home. And Benedict was the author of Race and Science, Race, Science and Politics in 1940, and co-author of Race and Cultural Relations in America's Answer to the Myth of a Master Race, published in 1942. So this pamphlet really was just one of a whole spectrum of efforts that Ruth Benedict participated in, and Gene Weltfish had a similar resume of anti-racist things that she participated in. This editor's description went on, using science to prove that we are all, quote, one human race, unquote, and that culture, not nature, accounts for differences among people, was controversial in the 1940s. It was to be distributed by the USO, but Kentucky Congressman Andrew May objected. It's interesting how you find this kind of information tucked away and that you have to dig it out like this. But I did. May persuaded the Army to stop distributing the pamphlet. His act inspired public protests, garnered media coverage, and boosted sales. The Races of Mankind sold nearly a million copies in its first 10 years and was translated into French, German, and Japanese. And I wanted to make a point about that, the translations. It wasn't translated into Philippine for those Huk tribesmen to read and be edified by it. It was our enemies, supposedly, in World War II, the Germans and the Japanese and the French. And it didn't need to be translated into English because it was already in English. I guess they missed Italian. They should have translated it into Italian, too, and to teach those fascists. In 1945, United Productions of America, UPA, made the book into an animated cartoon titled The Brotherhood of Man. UPA was an innovative animation studio founded by Dave Hilberman, Zach Schwartz, Steve Bosastow, and John Hubley, all former Disney employees and ex-communists, what a coincidence, who took part in the 1941 strike. Disney's response to the strikers was to fire them. Hubley and Phil Eastman, another ex-Disney striker and ex-communist, animated the cartoon, and future Hollywood 10 member Ring Lardner Jr. co-wrote the script. Now, I didn't look up any of these people, but it sounds like an awful lot of Jewish names to me, and I'll bet that's exactly what you would find if you researched it. You know, one of the signs of fraud in this is how the anti-racist story has shifted over time. It started by calling racial differences into question, you know, with skull plasticity results that turned out to be fraudulent. And it proceeded on to lies that science was proving racial differences aren't significant. Eventually it became complete racial denial, no such thing as race. And eventually it's become that race is this fraud that's concocted by stupid, crazy, evil white people. Another point that's coming out of this is memes are important. It's not just genes. Ideology can overcome biology. And we see here with the work that Boas and Benedict and Weltfish have done, and this book, this pamphlet, The Races of Mankind, this demonstrates how it's done.